Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Wire Talks, the Wire podcast. This is Thomas Scurria, your host. I work here at Wire, and I'm really excited to be joined by the co-founders of Wire, Mike and Yanni. Guys, welcome to the show.
What's up?
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for the time. You know, I didn't know where to start with this podcast, but Wire's just been around the block, right? We've been around for 5 years, which is something I didn't know when I was even interviewing here 6 months ago. Wire's actually been a crypto company for 5 years, which not too many other crypto players can say. And the journey really started in 2013. We were really very scrappy, and it was just Mike and Yanni. I think you guys were in a hacker hostel. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, literally. Sleeping on top of one another, bunk beds. Like,
who is on top? Who is on bottom?
that's the X-rated version.
That double entendre. Yeah.
No, there should be a website that has like the Bitcoin cemetery.
They're like a Bitcoin graveyard. You mean?
But for the companies, not just like
I think yeah. I feel like there is like. But yeah, no, Yanni was he moved into the bunk on top.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually got photos of it still. We sometimes talk about that.
Awesome. Take me back to the beginning, guys. So you guys met in this hacker hostel. Mike, you moved here from Australia, one-way ticket. Yanni, you found yourself here from Baltimore, if I believe. So how did you guys become friends, you know, after just becoming bunkmates and then finding a company together? What were the steps in between?
We're still working on the friends part, actually. Yeah. So we did manage to work together, though.
We went straight into marriage and then started working on the friendship backwards.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you're so squished together in these bunk beds and shit like that. Like, you find out pretty quickly who's doing what and why. And, like, you know, I mean, if you're spending, you know, all morning and all evening and stuff together, you know, you get to understand people pretty quickly. And like, I mean, Yanni and I are very similar in, I mean, could be wrong. He's like, no, I'm not a dickhead. You're a dickhead. yeah, we're both dickheads. Yanni and I are similar. I mean, at least for me, what I gravitated towards Yanni working together was just like, you know, we'd think of something and we'd want to get something done to chuck out an MVP or run some numbers or do some research. And we're both like, I feel like very similar. We're really different in ways, but we're very similar in being super resourceful. If we don't know something, we will find out a way to get the answer pretty quick.
To the point where we're like absolute serial pests.
Oh, the worst.
We've been called serial pests multiple times in our careers. From the early days.
I mean, like that. That's such a thing. I think it's such an underrated thing as well. Like,
be a serial pest.
Just being resourceful and like door knocking really great, like digital door knocking. I need to, let's say, just high level example. I need to get a bank account and I'm a crypto company. We need to be able to do something like that. Back in the day, it's like, how do you get that done? Oh, well, I asked Wells Fargo and they said no. So I guess that shuts that. No, dude, like, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Not taking no for an answer and biasing towards action, I think, are key attributes of many successful entrepreneurs. What do you think are some other key attributes of entrepreneurs? I just want to discuss this because so many people come to Silicon Valley full of these dreams, but I think they're nervous about taking action and they face some roadblocks. So what would you give, what kind of advice would you give to entrepreneurs in those kind of situations?
Yeah, it depends on like the stage of the company. Like if you're just starting out, obviously the skill sets that you need vary again from like industry to industry. But if you're just starting out, you need a completely different skill set than like a company of our size, right? Like you can't just go and press Command S and launch code right now.
That was how we deployed our server. Yeah. Was basically overriding the database between each other and pressing Control S, which is essentially just clicking save.
Yeah. So those skill sets probably don't get you that far anymore in the current version of Wire. But you know, when you first start, just get something out. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, don't worry about what people think. Don't worry about what like getting it to the perfection or getting the MVP to perfection. Just get something out. Your users will tell you. I think Mike and I have always done that in some way. We use leverage Reddit really pretty aggressively early on. From like our launch was like only on Reddit. We didn't even launch on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. It's only on Reddit. We got feedback almost immediately, and then
People torn to shreds.
Yeah,
but like that's the carrying on from that. I 100% agree with exactly what you're saying. Like, just put it out there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Whether it's an idea, and it's like some people are like ultra. You get kind of two types. So there's sort of three people. People that just go, fuck it, and they just send it out, and they're like, tell me if this is good or not. And then, like, they work with the feedback. Then you get the two people that don't do that. You get the paranoid perfectionist type, which if they can see something wrong, they're immediately not happy to put it out until it's absolutely perfect. Or you get the paranoid types that don't want to share their $1 trillion idea because you're going to come and take it and steal all my money. Mm-hmm. And, like, the idea is basically, look, your idea is dog shit, most likely, and it's not even about the idea anyway. The idea is 1%. Execution is everything. And I think, like, Reddit, one of the things, like, Yanni and I, for us, we're always just like, all right, let's spin up a real, like, quick, easy thought of, like, the idea or the premise, and let's just chuck it out there. And you're going to get all that feedback. You're no way you're going to be able to predict what the market wants across, you know, so much. So get the feedback. Mm-hmm. The faster you get the feedback, the faster you fail. The faster you fail, the quicker you iterate.
Yeah. Yep. So ship it and then be okay with the rejection and definitely solicit feedback. You guys have gotten rejected a handful of times.
many a time. The masters at that shit.
Yeah. Like, right.
I could not say that anymore, in that, like, I feel like some people just have, like, really easy paths to, like, their story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, man, just every not angle, easy not easy. Wire. Okay, not easy for just, not. It's firstly, it's not easy starting a company in general. It's hard. It's not easy.
Starting a fintech company.
It's not easy company,
starting a Bitcoin fintech
and
company.
Then starting a crypto or Bitcoin fintech company, like, just kiss your odds goodbye.
Yeah, and in 2013, I mean, too, right? So what was the scene like then? You guys got into Boost VC. And this was after getting rejected by Y Combinator.
Yeah, we met with Paul and Jess, who were, and Sam, Sam as well, who's now the president. And, like, that was an amazing experience. And we felt really, really confident that, I mean, personally, I thought we were in a really good position where we could get into them. But, you know, I think we got into Boost shortly after that. Or no, we had an offer from Boost, and then we were taking the interview with YC. And, like, I mean, now I wouldn't change any. I would not change any part of our story today.
I think that was, like, so in the early days, I mean, like, when we first started, you know, we've been pivoting around crypto. Like, even how we got into crypto has been something like, has been somewhat of a wild ride, right? Like, we originally, so prior to, like, Snapcard, which is, like, the predecessor to Wire, there was a product called Simlu, and Simlu essentially was a savings app, right? Which is, like, now a Digit. It's like very similar to Digit,
yeah,
right?
It's like that autonomous saving platform.
So, like, Mike and I were hacking away in this, like, hacker house. I was working for a company called SafeNet. Mike would just move one way ticket over here to SF. We were bunk mates and working on different projects, and over time we decided that this we want to help people save money for their Cancun trip. Like,
basically, yeah, everyone sucks at saving money. Like, yeah, they're just terrible at it. And we were like, how can we solve this problem to make, you know, something decent that encourages it, supports it, embraces the idea? Like, you know, more power to, like, oh, that's cool. To save money is cool, not to buy some baller ass watch on a credit card to look like a hero for 20 minutes.
Goals based. It was super goals based. So we ended up pitching to, like, we did a deck. We were working on the floor of this hacker house, and we ended up pitching to a bunch of different people. We got a meeting. Remember Alfred Lind? We got a meeting with, like, 2 weeks.
From Sequoia?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a meeting with Sequoia, like, and Alfred Lind. Hi, Alfred. If you're ever listening to this, that'd be good. Hey, mate.
If he's listening, we should forward him the email of us, like, spamming. I think we might have spammed, and spam is the correct word. And this never 100%. Works. Don't ever do this. Because, we eventually found out, like, a year later, you can't just, like, email 500 investors expecting to have them give you money. But we did get some meetings.
Yeah.
And Alfred Lynn was one of them.
Yeah. No, dude, Alfred Lynn's like as legit as it gets. He's a some, you know, he's a very well-respected person around there, around, you know, the Bay Area and Silicon Valley and probably the startup ecosystem in general. And like, yeah, that was sort of the original premise of what we started on, was just like hustling for savings to become a thing. And mm-hmm. now there's like a lot of apps that are actually like, Yanni sent me a photo last night of one of these apps, like Digit or whatever, what they're doing. And it's literally almost exactly from what our deck was back in 2013.
There's so many of those out there because, you know, saving is just a huge problem with millennials.
Yeah.
It's coming out.
Yeah. Yep.
Bunches yep. of debt. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
And then as part of that product, we added, so as part of when we first released that, hey, you can now save money. And then one thing led to another, you know, we ended up moving hacker houses in between that. The hacker house that had like 30 some people living in bunk beds in this like 2-story apartment in
it was an orphanage.
It was an orphanage with Wi-Fi. Yeah. This ended up getting dispersed, and basically what ended up happening is we ended up starting our own one. And during that process, we were building out Simlu, which is the product, the name of the product. And then so I think how it happened is, I think Mike, you were actually the first one. We should add crypto to this. We should add Bitcoin to.
Yeah, no. I 100% remember that conversation. Very explicitly. I was like, dude, we should 100% add Bitcoin to this. Dude, Bitcoin is going bananas. Like, people are really excited about it. Yanni's like, ah, man, like, what are we going to have Bitcoin for? And I was like, dude, at the very least, we get to, like, reach out to this new audience and they might be really excited about it. And we, like, to be honest, I mean, I think we both, like, we'd already, I know I was already into Bitcoin, but not in a trying to build product, just as in a, yeah, I got a ticket in the, you know, mm-hmm. a ticket on the roller coaster, you know, a couple of years before. And then now, next thing you know, we were building stuff and we added Bitcoin and like we put it on Reddit and we're like, hey guys, like we just added Bitcoin. You guys can spend it on like a bunch of different websites if you want. People were like, oh shit, this is mad. And like the community just rallied so hard behind us in like the best way possible. And yeah, I think like that is now a testament to how far, you know, the whole ecosystem of, you know, crypto and blockchain stuff, really pioneered by like the passion of the early adopters in like Bitcoin, just being like, yo, we are making this awesome thing mm-hmm. a thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, everyone get involved or get out of the way.
Is that when you realize that you need to go into Bitcoin all in and kind of pivot the startup into new direction?
Yeah. So some of the technology that we ended up building for this like savings app was like, okay, some of the technology that we're building for this like savings app was okay, now you can like have this JavaScript plugin on your browser that like takes products all over the internet and stores them in a shopping cart, and then you can like check out on that shopping cart to save for it. And that was kind of like the beginnings to, okay, well, now you have things in a shopping cart on your browser and you can check out and pay with one credit card, and it can be in multiple websites, or you can pay with crypto. And we launched on a Reddit, and pretty quickly, like, crypto was like the only thing that people were really interested on that. And that was like a few weeks before like the beginning of Boost, like the closing date of like.
Yeah, that was just before we went into Boost, and that coincided with the, you know, the mega bull rush on like late 2013. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So everything like kind of timed properly, right? So we had like this awesome idea on Reddit, and it's a testament of like how scrappy we were. The first version that we launched on Reddit was just a screenshot, and if you press like sign up for an account, it just saved it to a Google form, and you got like sent to a 404 page. Like you didn't actually create an account. It was just like a sample just to see if there's interest in that, which is pretty funny. So we had some like market validation. Hey, there was something there. We ended up applying to Boost, YFC, and just started pestering people about it. And had an interview with Adam and Brayton, thought they were doing really awesome things. And we were lucky enough to get accepted there.
Yep.
And that was like,
After we got rejected from them.
Yeah.
Following that theme of rejection, right?
Yeah. How did you turn that first rejection?
Oh, every single time someone says no to you, like you at a very minimum, you're not saying like, oh, why'd you say no? You're a fucking idiot. Like, I'm awesome. No, you'd be like, you know, hey, thank you so much for the opinion. Could you give me some constructive pointers in, like, for the rest of my journey? Like, you know, I'm rolling the dice of my whole life here. Like, tell me what I sucked at that made you a no. And, like, lucky we asked that. I've got the screenshot of the email that it basically was like, oh, no, we were trying out this new platform because AngelList had just allowed, like, sort of one or two click submissions for AngelList teams. So, like, if we created a profile on AngelList, it'd be two clicks to apply to an accelerator. And then we did that. We went through that and, they were basically using, and they were like, oh, whoops, accidentally, you did get in. And maybe to this day, I still don't know if they were just like, let's just chuck them a bone. But that was like, that was awesome. And I remember, you know, going to Boost, that was so exciting for us. And we were like, wow.
Yeah, it was like a whole experience, right? So like Boost offered us like housing. So we ended up moving to San Mateo while running this hacker house in San Francisco.
In bunk beds in San Mateo.
Yeah, right? So we've been in bunk beds for the first like 3 years, or, you know, no, 2 years of our relationship, right?
Yep.
Since day one, and 2 years after that, we've been living in a bunk bed together. And then we were lucky enough to get beds side by side to each other.
Yeah, in our old office, we finally graduated from bunk beds. So literally 2013, 14, we're in bunk beds. And then we got our own office, which was an apartment. And we had like one of the meeting rooms was basically Yanni in my bedroom. And we just shared like we had.
It was Mike in my bedroom.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. It was basically the bedroom. And we just sort of like, you know, we didn't. Really, everything was just about like, and it still is for the most part, everything is just about making something cool, you know what I mean? And that is for us, that's why. So like, you know, we were getting paid 20, I think literally we were getting paid like 20 grand. I mean, I don't know what Yanni's on now, but we're still getting paid like hardly anything. But I mean, it's just, everything is just pouring our heart and soul into building some cool stuff. And I think that's sort of what Wire is becoming and why we've been able to survive. And
yeah.
Yeah, last through the crypto winter.
Yeah, so we had, remember the first day moving into the office, aka apartment? We ended up waking up and the beds were side by side. And it was in a small room, right? Like the room was like, I don't know, 8x12 or something like that.
Fine.
So you had two full size beds next to each other and there's probably like 2 feet in between the beds. And I woke up and I just saw Mike's face right next to mine. Like literally side-by-side
like waking up, kind of like waking up after a night out or something. And you're like, huh? Who, what? And then like just eye to eye with each other. We're like,
yeah.
And then Yanni like got out of his bed and went into my bed. And I was like, what?
No, he didn't. And then the next day we ended up getting one of those like geisha girls. Like,
you know, the geisha girls in the movies, how they get changed behind with like the silhouette. We had one of those things just so we didn't wake up staring into each other's eyes.
Yeah. That was good fun.
Yeah,
that was good office, you know. And we didn't actually move out of that until 2016 when Wire first started.
Right? Yeah, when we rebranded to Wire and we went from our apartment into this sort of official office where we are now. And yeah, that was when we were like, all right, graduating to paying full rent in San Francisco. Fuck my life.
We're definitely going to get into the rebranding of Wire part, but I'd just like to dig a little deeper on the 2013 crypto scene. Mm-hmm. So Boost took you in, and Boost at the time even was known to be more of a crypto kind of incubator, which is a very unique thing.
They were so far ahead of the game. Like,
so far ahead.
Awesome.
But when you were going around to raise, I guess, your seed round or, mm-hmm. or your Series A maybe, what were the investors like at that time? Crypto was not even an established sector in the venture capital world. So I imagine there are some characters that you had to deal with in 2013, 2014.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like in the investor space, it was obviously a ton of noise in like anyone that had the word, like people were just shoving. I think it's probably akin to the tokens last year. Like everyone's just taking some normal business and shoving a token in it and being like, you know, this plus tokenized or something. And people are like, oh my God, I need to pour money into this. As it was sort of like 2014 where it was like, oh, we're lending, but Bitcoin. We're Venmo, but Bitcoin. We're blah, blah, blah. Mm. And they were just sort of slapping Bitcoin on the end of it. I mean, nothing, like I didn't see anything compelling. You know, and at the time we were focused on just purely the merchant acceptance and spending and spending crypto, making it more, you know, places you can spend it. And then obviously we added the multi-currency wallet
Yeah, can you guys elaborate on that? The first product, and this is SnapCard, right?
Yeah, US SnapCard.
Just adding to Mike's. I mean, like, it was very, very, it was an interesting time to raise money in the crypto industry, right? So you had traditional VCs that kind of didn't know what crypto was, and you still have VCs like that, right? Like, that don't really understand crypto, and they're just investing because like their buds are investing in it. No offense or anything like that, but that's literally the scene. And it was even worse back in 2013. So they were trying to take traditional models and apply them to crypto, right? And that just couldn't work, right? Like, it was such a it was such a new industry where there was nothing, like, understanding users, understanding like AUM is not there, right? Like, there isn't any model into that. And in our biggest fault, you know, during Boost, I mean, we just did incredibly well. All we were doing is just shipping and adding new users. So our biggest fault during that was actually have like revenue and actually have like customers and actually have some like monthly TPV, right? Total processing volume. And when the problem is, like, when you have that, then people just judge you against that, right? So
like, as a startup, like, you stay in this realm of, oh, we're never monetizing, or we're not doing this, or, you know, like, and that's a really safe place to stay as a startup founder, because it means, you know, you're still being measured against the dream and not what's quantifiable on a balance sheet. Like, and the moment you start talking balance sheet stuff, like, oh, well, we made $10,000 in revenue last month. Great. An investor wants to see $11,000 the next month. And if they don't see that, it's what the fuck happened?
Yeah. And that's always been like, actually, Mike, that's since 2013, that's been kind of like our curse, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'd say, like, we've always, because Mike and I are entrepreneurs, right? We're not these like Silicon Valley, like, raise a ton of cash and just like YOLO it, right? We're like, okay, we want to make money. We want to build a business. And
we want to generate revenue. We want to actually make a very solid business, instead of just sort of we'll monetize later, it'll be awesome. Like, we're
That might change our, you know, that might change with future businesses and stuff like that. But it was really interesting. Like, Mike and I don't come from like, oh, we've started like multiple companies in the past type thing, and we don't come from like backgrounds of like understanding Silicon Valley and like how frothy it is and stuff like that. So building a business has been key. So what I'm trying to say is, like, it was very difficult for us to actually, you know, we performed extremely well throughout Boost, and during this whole, you know, after Boost, like, people were just judging us on total processing volume and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we found it pretty challenging, even though there were companies in that same time, you know, that didn't produce any revenue that were raising massive rounds, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, like, you get the teams that are like, oh, you know, they, three guys that went to Stanford and one went from Harvard, and then they were interns at Google, and then they're at Facebook for 3 years, and then they came out, they raised a bunch of money.
Yeah.
They raised, you know, like 10x what we'd raised, and they're out of business. I remember, like, one clear example was, like, we were in with this company that was basically, you know, the superstar who's who, and they're a competitor of ours, and they raised a lot of money from really, really, really big names, and we were like, oh, sick, this is gonna be easy. And and basically we'd raised like 1/10 of what they'd raised, and they were very, like, you know, they were just splashing money around everywhere. And obviously in crypto, when you went 2013 and things are going amazing, that's awesome, but, you know, we all know that crypto winter hit and drained all the companies out, like, froze them to death, basically. 2014, 15, 16. So this company raised a ton of money, huge team, awesome team. And yeah, there's a ton of them, actually. There's one in particular, but we actually ended up sort of about 12 or 18 months later, we were sitting down doing diligence to acquire them. And, like, if you look at the valuation on what they had when they started and the team size and everything, like, you know, it's like, I don't know if anyone's seen the movie Little Giants, but Little Giants is the team of misfit deadbeats.
Yeah,
that's us. Yep. I mean, I'm sitting here with team members, but, like, that's us. Like, our story, we're not the pedigree, the run-of-the-mill assembly line.
We're just building. Building and trying to hustle.
Just hustling,
That's been kind
of our always mind.
We've been called the cockroach, you know,
surviving many a crypto cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And we're about to get into another one, so we'll see.
Yep.
We shall see.
So 2013 to 2016, we're SnapCard, merchant processing. Now it's 2016. We're pivoting into payments and rebranding as Wire. But why did we do that?
We flipped a coin and it turned out that I mean, like with this whole winter thing, like everyone was, you know, like Yanni said before, like our goal is always to, you know, stay afloat. And if we felt that, you know, not having the pedigree or, you know, the ability, whatever it is, to be able to raise very easily, then we wanted to make sure that we were always conscious of that. And we didn't want to leave ourselves at the mercy of investors all the time. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh no, we'll be fine. We'll just raise again or something like that. So for us, it was sort of, well, let's look at what's doing a lot of volume and helping our business a lot. And so we had the merchant processor, then we added in the crypto exchanging with like buying and selling like a wallet. And that started, the numbers just went better and better with every iteration. And so the most meaningful numbers we found was in essentially cross-border payments for businesses that were, you know, sending money to Brazil or paying suppliers in China for stuff that they're buying. Like that was a huge, huge opportunity for us. And it was impossible to deny the data. Like it was 100x bigger than literally every other metric we touched.
Yeah.
So we just sort of went, all right, let's hit it. Crypto is showing no signs of any kind of, you know, insane resurgence. Not that, you know, it was all powered and we took the same infrastructure from our crypto platform and it still was the same. We just put a new coat of paint on the top. So people were still essentially, you know, when they'd say US dollars, sending US dollars into China to pay the manufacturer, that's still actually, they're giving us US dollars and we're converting it into Bitcoin, transferring Bitcoin and then liquidating the Bitcoin. So the same engine that ran on, it was just sort of being, you know, presented differently to the customer, which is really interesting because all these people talk about, you know, what's the use case of crypto and stuff and, you know, how are people going to understand it? Like we still have tons and tons of customers that were using it without knowing they were ever touching crypto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening was we, just to clarify that, like we ended up launching a wallet, right? In 2015. So the wallet was like, we ended up finding out that merchant processing wasn't a good idea because people didn't want to spend their crypto when the Bitcoin price was low, right? So we're like, okay, cool. Well, let's get some more people into the crypto industry. So we launched a wallet and spent a lot of time growing out that wallet, spent a lot of time talking to regulators in different countries, opening up Mexico, opening up Brazil, opening up USA, opening up Canada and Hong Kong and China, right? So the wallet was like our bread and butter business where people could log in, very similar to Coinbase, what it is today, log in, deposit some funds, and then exchange it to crypto. So what we ended up happening was we would notice like a massive use case where people were depositing funds here in the US, and converting that to crypto, and then sending that crypto into their like BTC account in their Brazil wallet, that's on our platform, and then liquidating it into BRIs and paying out, you know, either to their own account in Brazil or to another account that they, you know, like a beneficiary account. So we looked at that use case and that was pretty interesting to us because like then we started putting the exchange rates on top of that and we're like, wow, this is like a pretty interesting use case. Let's build a product around it. And, you know, we were at a point in the company where we're testing a lot of different things, right? Launching new markets, testing out different things. And it made sense that, you know, let's roll this out. Let's see if there's any interest. And the API MassPay started. And that's how we originally got into payments, right? So that MassPay API was all done. There were some use cases through the dashboard that I was describing. But when we released that MassPay API, there's a lot of our current partners that got super interested in it and started integrating almost immediately. And then towards the end of 2016, about 90% of our volume was actually coming from that. I'd say about 90%, Mike, right?
It was coming directly
from that API, the transfer API, where people can transfer funds back and forth. And it was like kind of, we're like, okay, well, this is what we're pretty bullish on. And we think that we're solving a massive use case in the industry where people are using the crypto in actually transferring value, and we have really good exchange rates in doing that, and it's fast, right? For move money from here to Brazil, it took people literally less seconds to actually get the funds into their account, and that was something that's been historically, you know, one of the, it would take anywhere between 2 to 3 business days actually sending funds into Brazil. So there was a really massive need for it. So launched that API, and then towards the end of 2016, we were like, okay, let's just drop everything else off and relaunch, move SnapGuard into and rebrand it to Wire. And that's how Wire started.
That's awesome. So when you did do that pivot from SnapGuard to Wire, I imagine you were growing in terms of personnel, probably moving into a new office, things like that. What were some of the growing pains and challenges?
Dude, fucking everything. Like, yeah, I mean, I will 100% say, and we're still there. Like, you guys know, like, this year's been bonkers. Last year, I mean, you guys weren't here last year, but like, this year is even super challenging as we're navigating sort of the, do I spit on my face?
No.
Oh, I thought. No, sorry.
There's
like
a couple people in this room.
Yeah, like someone's looking at me, like itching the side of their mouth, kind of like, oh, wipe the food off your face. And I thought I was spitting while I was talking. But basically, look, really hard, really difficult. Like, you know, Yanni is not Zuckerberg and I'm not Jack Dorsey. Like, this is our first rodeo. We're going to make a shit ton of mistakes. And I think that's okay as long as we don't give any kind of delusion that we are sort of like, you know, oh, everyone's wrong, we've done everything perfectly. No, we've done fucking heaps of shit wrong. And in a good way. Like,
Mike, I mean, talk about like the focus, right? Like the focus.
Yeah, well,
I mean
one of the core things that we've always sort of said as a company is like the focus is to not be focused. Because if you stay focused in an area that is undefined, which was, you know, Bitcoin and crypto, people were tripling down saying, we're only doing this and stuff like that. It's very admirable. But for the purposes of remaining as successful and relevant and stuff like that for as long a time, I feel like you need to be incredibly adaptable. And we've always said that. Like, we want to be able to bring things to sort of, like, let's say we're going to bring all the chess pieces forward and we're not going to strike until we're confident, like some sort of level of confidence. And obviously 2013, much wider horizon of what's possible because no one knows anything. 2014, 15, 16, 17. And like the lens of, we can see what is actually needing to be done. And then now sort of as a company, learning that the market is mature enough to understand what works and what doesn't work, we've got all our pieces in place where we've moved sort of 70% on 4 or 5 different things. Now we can sort of strip those away with one thing and triple down on it and go forward with that. So hard to keep the train on the tracks when you're doing a lot of things and the industry is doing a lot of things on its own as well. And definitely learning about that was, talk for hours on that shit.
Yeah, that's a massive growing pain. I mean, like imagine having a company that's growing every, you know, doubling in size year over year and
more. We went from end of September, end of October in 2016, we were like 11 people. End of October, or same time a year later, we were, you know, 38, and we'd acquired our competitor in China in February. So we had a team in China, 5 people in China, people here. It was just, it's a shit show.
Yeah. So imagine growing in that scale and then having a goalpost that is not clearly defined, right? Like a lot of people are, I mean, that's been a massive growing pain. A lot of employees and a lot of people that you want to, like the A-star players that you want to bring on your team, they are mission driven. Like they want to work for a company that does cool shit and are all working for the same goal, right? And we made a decision early on that wasn't going to be our goal. Like, we don't know what the goal is, right? The goal is no goal, right? And so as a result of that, like people are, you're always fighting for resources left and right. And you're always, people are staying vague about like what the priorities are, even though priorities for us were always like more revenue. More revenue is better, right? Like, That was like a massive thing that's been consistent through our like cockroach phase, right? Where and we still are, but like, you know, more revenue, more transaction volume, and that's the goal. But as you get and that's great, but like it's hard to motivate a team that's growing super fast without like a mission and without a serious goal. So I think in the past couple months, like Mike and I and the board also has played a massive emphasis on this. And I think we've done, especially Mike's done some amazing work on motivating everyone. He's a Pinocchio nosing.
I'm doing a pretend Pinocchio. Like,
no, you've done a massive job in putting together a mission for the company and right. getting everyone aligned. And I think everyone here in this room can feel the effects of that, right? Like it's mm-hmm. everyone is just the energy and like the focus and the amount of work that we're producing right now has yep. been better than we've ever produced in the company in the yep. history of Wire.
Yeah, and the whole industry has gotten a little bit more clear, I suppose. So we do know what to kind of focus on. We can be a little bit more goal-driven. So what does the future vision of Wire look like? What are the goals that we clearly see that are in place that we are
not telling?
Well, that's an excellent question, Thomas. And because we articulate it so well and we're so well aligned as a company, I know that you know the answer to that. So I'm going to let you answer that. Nah, dude, I'm not going to throw you under the bus. No, but I mean, like, but basically, like, as a company, I mean, yeah, to the listeners, look, we're still getting there in terms of propagating everything. But I think, like, the core principles, everyone knows that. You know, we don't know, nobody knows the end game of all of this. So being agnostic as a company in terms of, you know, we don't favor anyone. We don't favor, like, I mean, personally, we've all got favorites, obviously, but for the idea of making crypto a thing, there's no point in taking favorites because we're not fighting against like different cryptos. We're fighting against crypto or non-crypto. So let's all make crypto a thing first. And then once crypto's a thing, let's all figure out who's better at crypto, like what's better, like, you know, whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's Ethereum or whatever it is. And so for us as a company, I think we've always taken that, let's just make it accessible. So yeah. all the hard work that we've done and all the mistakes we've made, you know, wrapping that all up into like essentially our API so that developers that haven't been in this space for 5 years and entrepreneurs, they can come in and be like, okay, there's 5 years of headaches in 10 lines of code. Thank you for like making me not go through that. So when I say that, we give our API to people that is essentially like a crypto infrastructure in a box. So all compliance, on-ramps, off-ramps, you know, global coverage kind of thing. And as we grow as a company, their whole infrastructure grows as well. One of our customers was saying like the typical target customer that we have is we power a lot of brokerages, a lot of exchanges or decentralized applications and stuff. And I think now we're moving more aggressively into the dApp space of we want to be solving this problem for dApps, because if we have people that are building shit, we don't want them to have to waste their time trying to understand or get some legal opinion about, oh, how do I get a bank account? How do I do the right things to get a bank? It's like, no, just the world, if we want to make crypto a thing, we need you focused very aggressively on your awesome product that was not possible before crypto. Let us handle the shit show on the other side. I suppose one thought is a customer actually said this to us, where a big crypto exchange, they do a lot of sort of like, they're actually a bank and they do a lot of crypto stuff. They were saying it's sort of like a Stripe in the way that they're an e-commerce company and they are an e-commerce company. They don't know payments. They don't know PCI compliance and all that stuff. But you're dropping in Stripe, which is extremely developer friendly, and they can still handle payments and stuff, but they don't have to worry about draining resources from their typical e-commerce business. In the same way with crypto, we handle all the compliance and the regulatory stuff and onboarding and offboarding, but they can just build their app build their business. And that's super exciting. And one of the things we talked a bunch, sorry for the word soup, by the way, I realized that was a long explanation, but this whole ecosystem requires a long explanation. So fuck off. No, I'm kidding. Don't fuck off. Keep listening. Actually do whatever you want, to be honest.
Have the option to fucking off.
Yeah, you have the option to fuck off. Thomas puts the mic down and goes, gets a beer. But I think in general, we just like this industry is moving so fast. Everyone needs to be like, I think of it as crypto is a big group project, like from high school, but it's for the whole world. Like you need to segregate your expertise and like in 5 years time, everyone will be stitching everyone's projects together. Whether that's like, you know, I use Lightning Network for the infrastructure behind all the transactions. And then I'm using Dharma protocol for lending services or whatever it is, everyone's going to be using everyone, but let's make sure we just everyone build their thing and we'll stitch it all together later. So we want to be part of helping everyone make that make those products better and slicker.
Yeah.
That's the elevator pitch, by the way. Yeah.
Crypto apps interacting with the fiat world.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's right. That's the sentence.
I do like that analogy you have of the, this is just one giant high school group project.
It is. Like, literally. Like, everyone, really, I mean, people are working together with no one. And just in the same way, when you're doing a high school group project, there's always the slacker who's like the leech. You know what I mean?
That's Coinbase.
They've done nothing for the industry. 30 million users. But you know what I mean? Like, there's always the slacker that's like draining time and effort from everyone. And I think like for us, it's just like, we're trying not to be the slacker. You know, we're like trying to put in as much effort as we can to make everyone's lives easier.
We're like that kid that just did all this hard work that's never going to end up in the presentation and done the hard miles.
That's a really good representation of what it's been like. It's changing now.
That's what it feels like.
This podcast is the first story.
No, but I think like the most important thing, literally what Yanni said, like I think the tagline is kind of like being the bridge between crypto and fiat. Crypto companies have a hard time doing business in a fiat world. I think that's what it says on the slide deck that we put for the company.
Yeah, Pascal helped us out with that one too.
Yeah, he's smart. And Benton's doing the finger circle motion, like wrap it up.
Well, thanks guys. Yanni, Mike, really a pleasure. Thank you for sharing the story. Listeners, thank you for tuning in to Wire Talks. Don't forget to follow Mike Dunworth on Twitter. What's your handle, Mike?
Oh, this is easy. At Michael Dunwert 1H? Or is there no H?
There's no H. It's just one.
Man, let's put a link
on your Dunwert.
Dunwert or something. No, there was, I ran out of characters or something.
And Yanni, are you a social media person?
No.
Oh, he's modest with his 1 million followers.
Okay. So,
thanks.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Thomas. You
guys. Thanks so much for joining us today. To learn more about Wire's work on crypto, check out the show notes included in the podcast. Reach out to us also on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Wire blog, Morse code, whatever you want. We're here for you. If you like this episode, please share it on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thank you again for listening.